You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hear that podcast growling. Mean and angry, hear that vocal shouting. It's Danger and Jay. It's Danger and Jay.
Hi, welcome to the latest edition to Hear That Podcast Ground. Presented by VSiN Network, working for everyone. Paul Inner Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic are here working for you on a beautiful Wednesday morning in the middle of the offseason. How are we doing, Jay?
Doing great. I'd be better if I had tickets to Slipknot tonight. I do not, but there's still time to go. Although Heritage Bank Arena is the worst place to see a concert, so I don't know if I want to do that. My wife will not go with me to see Slipknot, so I will either go solo or maybe I'll find somebody. But yeah, it's a good Wednesday, even if I don't get to see that show.
Man, the idea of going solo to see Slipknot at Heritage Bank Arena is just a combination of three things that are just fantastic. And I just appreciate you opening by being completely on brand. It's great. I'm sure, and I'm assuming stop at Arby's on your way home. You know, it's it's the ultimate. It's the ultimate J tour.
You have to. That's the pregame meal because I'm gonna get too old to eat food like that late at night.
Like what? Delicious, right, Jay?
Well, yeah, but it's still fast food. I mean, it's delicious for a reason. It's not great for you.
We're going to get to an Arby's question later. We're going to get into a mailbag. Yes. Thanks to all of you that have been sending in your mailbag questions. We're going to get to a bunch of stuff there. Questions on wide receiver 4, some more offensive stuff, some injury bug stuff, some good questions that you guys have sent in. We want to get to a bunch of stuff to get to today. Jay has a story up on Ja'Marr Chase and the sophomore season and, you know, the sophomore slump, right? I don't know if people think of sophomore slumps just because of the alliteration, because the sophomore ascension, the sophomore jump isn't as good as the sophomore slump coming right off of your mouth. And so it kind of makes me wonder if that's where this came from. But I think you talk to Ja'Marr, you talk to Zach Taylor, you talk to T, who's a great person to talk to about that, Tyler Boyd, a bunch of people, and they were great. Ja'Marr was great. And there's a lot of really interesting research involved in this. Your story, which is up, I highly recommend everybody goes and reads it. Of course, we have our deal going on the site, athletic.com, in case you didn't know. And so I want to dive into that a little bit more. I think it's a really interesting conversation around, one of the stars of this team, without question. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We'll have some news for you. We're going to do some breakout surprise candidates. I wrote about this in the mailbag last week, but I had some other ones I wanted to touch on. And Jay, I wanted to hear yours. And also, it's going to be a chance for us to bring you a conversation with Akeem Davis Gaither, who is coming off his foot injury that kind of stopped him right as he was starting to come on last year. And so I caught up with him in the locker room yesterday, and it was a really good conversation about where he's at, where he thinks he's going, and kind of why he thinks he might get there. I thought it was a fun conversation with Akeem, so wanted to bring you that. We'll get to that later. We will bring in Mo Egger. No pretenses about this. We will not talk about anything Bengals related. It's all Tommy Pham, Jock Peterson. You just got to let the man do what he's meant to do. I feel like this is the story that he was born to talk about, and it's fun, and you know, fantasy football's involved. The Bengals aren't involved directly, but I'm not going to lie. It's hysterical. It makes me laugh. And at this point in the offseason, if we can check those two boxes, I'll take it.
If he doesn't name his team Tommy Pham Slap this year or forever, I will be very disappointed. I wonder how many Pham Slap names will be on the ESPN fantasy football site.
There will be many. He already confirmed to me he has called dibs on his team name in all leagues being Big Dog in Vegas next year.
Oh, okay. There's another good one.
Yeah. So that's that was confirmed yesterday during my hour on ESPN 1530 with Mo. So he'll be back later. We'll have some fun with this because what else we going to do, Jay? Let's have fun. Yeah. Right?
Well,
let's have fun. Let's have fun. It's June. So all of that is coming your way. Let's run through some news real quick. News, not a ton of news from the Tuesday OTA. Again, we're still in the not real portion of the program, even by off-season standards. Other teams are, because they went on a different schedule than the Bengals, who pushed everything back. So still no helmets, still no one-on-one, still no anybody against anybody. Everything is against air. Everybody is out there just in jerseys and shorts. It's as non-football-y as you could possibly get. So again, these are hour-long workouts that just you're not necessarily getting a ton from them, but we can take attendance and can judge off some things. News-wise, Alex Kappa was there. He had the core muscle deal, in quotes, last week that he's dealing with. Zach Taylor, again, sort of suggested that he's not going to probably take part in this, you know, spring, summer, off season, but all signs point toward him being fine and being there for camp and all the things that matter. So right now at guard, you have Jackson Carman at left guard and Akeem Adeniji at the right guard spot, as Kappa is on the side, but he was there yesterday. Khalid Kareem moved over to being on the side, working on the side with the injury folks. Don't really have a specific on that, but I mean, we don't know if it's serious or not, but certainly the fact that he's over there doing all the stuff suggests that it is not. Who else was over there, Jay?
There was a lot. There was all the regulars, the linebackers, Marcus Bailey. I'm trying to go through the top of my head now. Joseph Osai is still over there. Logan Wilson, Batchy is still there. It was the regular cast that is, been there the last couple of weeks. The only newcomer was Kareem, which is a good sign. If whatever reason he missed last week must be minor, because, you know, as you mentioned, Kappa came back after a week off and was not doing anything at all. So at least for Kareem to be over there, it would lead you to believe it's not serious. We don't know that for sure, but it's a decent number of guys. I think there was about eight or nine over there at the peak of it, but there's no real concern. All those guys should be back for the start of camp. They're just bringing them along slowly.
T. Higgins also over there, Higgins on the side working, which is, he's up amongst those regulars we spoke of. A few people that weren't there at practice, Von Bell, Jermaine Pratt, Tyler Shelvin, safety Mike Thomas, were not there. And then of course, Trey Hendrickson and Jesse Bates continue to not be there. As we've talked about plenty, Bell was a flight missed issue. According to Zach Taylor, he wouldn't comment specifically on any of the other guys not being there. Other than to point out that all this is voluntary, and honestly, judging by what we've seen across airports across this great country of ours, I wouldn't be surprised if more people weren't flight related or all flight related or something like that, as a much of a disaster as the airports are right now.
Yeah, and you don't know where these guys are. You could say, well, he only lives 5 hours away or whatever it is, but there's no guarantee they went home. They may have gone to Vegas to try to be a big dog. They may have gone to see family in California. You just never know. And it was. There were so many flights canceled this weekend. It's not a stretch to believe that caused problems for Von Bell and possibly some of those other guys.
Did appear that the receivers were being big dogs in Vegas this weekend. According to their Instagram stories of Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins and Jamar Chase were with them, and they appeared to be having a very good time and big dogging it. So good for them, man. And Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
Young, fun, big dogs. Hey, run, right? Go have yourself a good time. So they appear to be doing that. Other news. We did. Zach Taylor did talk, but not a ton to come of that. Open locker room, not a lot. This is kind of just an interesting story. I don't know if it's news. It's not news, but it was just interesting. So kind of hanging out after practice, all of a sudden I look over and Joe Burrow is lining up with just his foot on the out of bounds line, like in a track sprinter type position. And I'm like, what is Joe about to do? And he just takes off. I mean, like hard sprint. Now he's got the trainers around him who are holding the iPad, one holding the iPad, another one halfway up, Joey Bosé halfway up. Looked like a stopwatch in his hand. And you know, they have the catapults on, which is your data system of everything you're doing, so they can get it all the information on all the physical stuff and speeds and things like that. And they were kind of looking at him, and Burrow's going as fast as he can. And I talked to Burrow a little bit about that afterwards, and he was like, you know, I'm just trying to get an extra work. You know, these workouts are so light, especially for quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. They don't really get any real workout in. And so if you're out there, you're trying to feel like you want to get some actual physical exertion. Sometimes you just do this. He doesn't do it all the time, but sometimes he does afterwards. And he really, if he's going to go do it, he's going to go do it and try to open it up. I think he was trying to hit a number. Yeah. I think he was trying to see if he could hit a number. He was really getting after it. Drew Sample was also out there kind of running afterwards after practice. And it was pointed out that he was just doing it because, again, he didn't feel like he was getting enough out of that practice that he wanted to kind of get himself to the level that he wants to be at this point in his training. All that stuff's real interesting. Because the data dumps they do off of that, they can take that information back in, see where everybody's at, what mile per hour they're going at. Because some of these guys in these practices are just not always given the opportunity to really open it up, really see where they're at. And so you can look at that, see you need to be somewhere else for next week or for your off-season program. And you can really use those numbers as a guide to see what you need to be doing more of or less of in practices and in your own program. So kind of fun stuff, but just, you know, just kind of Burrow being Burrow. Like I'm going after it. Like if I'm doing sprints after practice, guess what I'm doing? I'm trying to go as fast as I possibly can. And I need the extra work. I don't care if I'm QB1 or what I am. And Bengals fans, I know, loved seeing that. I tweeted out the video of it. If you want to take a look at that, again, not news, but just sort of interesting practice observations during a time of year where there aren't necessarily a ton of them.
I mean, we've seen those stories from Brody about how competitive he is at ping pong and basketball and everything else. So it just makes sense. And not optimal weather to be hitting a number. It was approaching 90 degrees at the end of practice. And maybe another day would have been better to try to hit that number. But maybe that was part of the challenge for him to do it in the heat and humidity. And it kind of goes to what everybody has talked about that guy since he got here, just that leadership ability and doing everything he can to be the best that he can.
No doubt. So that was kind of the latest from there. The other bit of news that came from yesterday, Jackson Carman declined to comment when asked about the piece in the Defector. I'm not quite sure why Jay and I somehow became the villainized face of this thing, as was the case after we talked about the fact Carman wasn't asked about the story and the allegations last week. We've always attempted to be transparent and conversational here on the pod. We want people to feel like they always know what we know, even if it's deep in the weeds of the beat. In regards to last week, we wanted to continue to be transparent about what happened, give it the proper time on the pod to recognize its importance, and even like specifically explain and express some regret over the fact the question was not asked the previous day. So we did. We didn't want to just let the issue go silent and avoid it. We certainly could have. Everyone else did, and that's totally fine. In retrospect, I guess that's what we should have done. I'm not going to dive into details of the logistics of it again, but the latest facts are Carman declined to comment on the Defector story as he was asked about it on Tuesday. Neither Carman nor the Bengals took any more questions on the matter yesterday. Everyone with the Bengals continues to decline to talk about the story, and there continue to be no charges on the allegations. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Let's move forward, okay? Let's talk about the sophomore slump story, right? Alliterative sophomore slump means that must be what to expect. Jay, I liked this. I as always, I like the story, but I like this idea too for this time of year with Ja'Marr Chase coming off Offensive Rookie of the Year, coming off a almost unprecedented first season. And, you know, kind of what comes next for him? Like, how can you possibly keep this up? What can you do next? It's sort of the thing that you hear a lot about Ja'Marr Chase. How could he get better? Could he be better? And I'm curious what you thought in kind of going around and talking to everybody about this and doing some of the research on it on that question. Like, can he and how can he be better in year two?
Yeah, I thought Zach made a great point on that, where he could have less numbers, lower numbers across the board, and still be a better player. If a defense wants to take a guy away, they can. And you better believe there's going to be a lot of focus thrown at Jamal. We saw that midway through last year where defenses started playing him different and they found different ways to get him. And there were games where he was not as much of a factor. But that's what Zach was talking about, is where the growth is going to come on more on the what he does mentally as opposed to his physical traits and improving speed, hands, whatever that, you know, route running. It's about learning the DBs in the league. And there's, yes, they study these guys on film, but a lot of times you truly can't get a feel for a way a guy wants to play you until you go head to head against him. And there's a lot of teams on the schedule this year outside of the AFC North that were on the schedule last year. And he's getting to know these DBs around the league. And that's what both Jamar and Zach said is going to be the next step in setting these guys up and knowing their tendencies and playing off of them. And, you know, it kind of goes back to that story you wrote about Joe Burrow in his rookie year, where you asked all the guys, the, you know, pitcher and Zach and Brian, their five favorite plays. And I think it was Brian brought up the one against Cleveland where he saw out of the corner of his eye, the cornerback take a step or two forward, knew exactly what was coming, audible and beat it. And that's what Jamar is going to be dealing with, and how a guy wants to play him and how he can use his tendencies against him. He did it again. He already has goals written on his mirror, he said. That was something that he talked about last year in training camp. He wouldn't tell me what the specific numbers were. He did say it was his yards and catches totals. And it almost seems like a fool's errand to try to beat 13 touchdowns. He said he's got to find what the minimum is he'll accept. But numbers are a part of it. But the bigger part is the mental aspect and really getting to know these corners and figuring out ways to set them up and beat them mentally, not just with his physical traits.
All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
One of the things that I thought that Zach Taylor said that I, in regards to this, that I thought I liked was, you know, it's not necessarily just about how Jamar gets better. It's about how he helps the team win more. And the understanding of him understanding how teams are going to play him more often and focus on him more often, and having a better understanding of how the team can then attack that. So it's not necessarily about Jamar's numbers going up. He can have a much greater impact on the team this year, and his numbers not necessarily go up. It's very possible, because it's about him and Burrow and the staff, the coaching staff, understanding how to use the way teams are going to focus on him. And use that against them in the same way. I thought that was a, you know, an interesting piece of this too. It doesn't always necessarily come back to the numbers. His knowledge and interpretation of what teams are trying to do to him is as important to Burrow and Zach Taylor and Jamar Chase as sort of a trio to make everybody on the whole offense shine and be more efficient.
Yeah, I mean, Zach pulled that the example right off the top of his head of the second Pittsburgh game last year, because if you remember the first one, right at the end of the first half, Jamar gets behind the defense. Joe hits him for a 34-yard touchdown, really kind of set the stage for the second half of that game that they won 24-10. Again, they're at the 32-yard line this time in the rematch, and single safety, Minkah Fitzpatrick, similar alignment, one-on-ones everywhere. He sees Jamar running the same route, and he cheats over to double Jamar, and that leaves T wide open on a one-on-one and 32-yard touchdown. And it's all because the same thing that, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick trying to play off the tendency of the Bengals and the Bengals countering and beating that cheat. And you're going to have that a lot. You're going to have a lot of teams rolling that safety toward Jamar. And it's just going to, that's why it's so important to have all these other weapons. Hayden Hurst, the new guy included at tight end, where it's not just Jamar setting up the defense. It's Joe and really the whole Brian, Zach, the whole play calling aspect of it. It's going to be interesting to see what teams are trying to do. If they are willing to just focus on Jamar and take him away, it's just going to create all kinds of opportunities for those other guys.
You had in your story, a ton of research on the second year jump for some of the most successful rookie years that we've seen in the league. And it's great stuff. I highly recommend people go through and peruse through and you see a little bit of a pattern. I was kind of curious about something. And so I kind of piggybacked off this and jumped into just the last 5 years, in this sort of new era, of passing and these great receivers that are coming up, so many of them in these draft classes and so impactful so quickly, which is, it seems to be the differentiator now between maybe some of the older players or the previous generations. And so I went back and looked the last 5 years, minimum 55 yards per game. So we can just kind of take some of the injury stuff out. Minimum 10 games. 55 yards per game as a rookie in the last 5 years. And I went through the top 10 of that list. How about all of them jumped in average yards per game the next year? All went up except for one. Brandon Ayuk went from averaging 62 to 49. Everybody else, Justin Jefferson, 87 to 95. Now Jamar had 85. He was second on the list. AJ Brown went from 66 to 77. Terry McLaurin went from 66 to 75 yards per game. Juju Smith-Schuster went from 66 to 89. CeeDee Lamb went from 58 to 69. Cooper Kupp went from 58 to 71. T. Higgins went from 57 to 78. DK Metcalf went from 56 to 81. There's partial answers to this. I mean, in that, you know, a lot of these guys in their rookie seasons don't start quite taking off until about the first 3, 4, 5 weeks. And then boom, they really take off. And that kind of becomes their average of who they are as a player. And then that plays out the next year. And yeah, it's going to go higher. But I think it's important to point out sophomore slump is nothing but alliteration. Okay. Because in the recent era of top instant impact receivers, there has been no slump. There's been no slump. There have been guys that have actually put up more yards per game almost universally across the league. And so it's when you're talking about expectations for Jamar Chase, can he actually be better? Yeah. And Jay, I loved you talking to Jamar about Justin Jefferson, his buddy from LSU, who's also right there at the top of the list because he somehow got better when a lot of people said, how could you possibly get better too?
Yeah. And I guess Tyler Boyd was right because Tyler Boyd didn't want any, I mean, he talked to me, he answered all my questions, but he was just really dismissive of the whole notion of sophomore slump. He doesn't believe in it. He thought it was just like, he didn't say it was alliteration, but he basically said it was crap. And it is interesting that what you've done there with the last 5 years to see these guys, because it is, if you have a breakout year like that, you are going to get more attention. And somehow, even with the more attention, all of them but one still got better. And even Brandon Ayuk, he didn't have more yards per game, but his yards per catch went way up. He went from 12.5 to 14.8. And part of that was because he only played 12 games as that rookie year, and he played all 17 last year. So that's naturally playing more is going to affect your yards per game. You're bound to have an off day or two in there, especially when Deebo Samuel was such a big part of that offense. So It is. I think if people out there are wondering what's next for Ja'Marr Chase, it sounds crazy to think he could put up even better numbers this year, but it's probably more likely it gets better than lowers.
Let's bring in some of your conversation with Ja'Marr Chase yesterday, Jay. I think it's good, especially when we start talking about him and his boy Justin Jefferson. Is good stuff here. So here's a little bit of Jay talking with Ja'Marr Chase.
I looked up the top 15 rookie receiving seasons of all time. There's only one player that increased his catches, yards, and touchdowns from year one to year two. It was your buddy Justin Jefferson.
Oh. So why is it always a competition with this guy?
Well, what it is I'm not so much looking at that, but just what do you think?
I look at it like that.
Yeah. What do you think the key is to avoiding that cliche sophomore slump? What do you have to do to? And it's not necessarily putting up the same numbers. You could have,
Basically, just get more comfortable with the offense. Maybe I get moved around a little more. Maybe to see different things on film. And then just making that spectacular catch. Now, you know what I'm saying? Justin did a lot of that this year. And I feel like those contested catches will make the team get more energy. You know, after certain plays, maybe the ball come back to me again. So, just making the tough catches and learning more spots in the offense. I think that's going to be a big improvement for me.
Coach Taylor said a big thing is, you know, your rookie year, those are just nameless, faceless DBs. There now, you know them. You know what their tendencies are, and you can kind of get that on film a little bit. But did you start picking that up as the year went on? Like when you play a team for the second time, I know they're going to do this.
So I really, the first main person that I noticed was just a freaking cat from the Browns. It's the Ward
Denzel. Yeah.
So I like his game a lot. Actually, he's one of the most patient. He reminds me of Derek Stingley. Actually, you know what I'm saying, he doesn't get beat often. When he does, he gets beat really bad. So he's real patient. So that's one person that, you know, tendencies that doesn't really show on film. And you know, you just gotta watch his film real close and check out everything you can on him. So that's somebody that, you know what I'm saying, that does it.
You only got three snaps against him the second time.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, I was low-key looking forward to it, but I low-key wasn't. So, like, that was one person that I did watch a lot of film on after the first time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Were you the intended target on his pick six?
Here.
In the first game?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. What was that
or
something?
A route by Ja'Marr Chase.
Really? Not Joe?
A route.
Why? What was?
I didn't sell a route.
Okay.
And I didn't give eyes. I just was a horrible route all around.
So, year one to year two, there's obviously differences. What is the biggest difference that you feel right now as opposed to this time last year?
It's just, like I said, it's just me getting the offense fully down. Like, I want to make sure I know. Like, last year, I was just out there running routes, having fun again. You know what I'm saying? Now, I got small details in the routes. Now, I can learn how to set people up for the next route.
Yeah.
So it's just all about, you know, just getting the small stuff down now. And I feel like that's going to make me a lot better.
Is your mirror clean right now, or do you already have the goals on?
I got two right now. I'm not going to say, but I got two of them so far. So, yeah.
Are they, is it?
I don't think they're hard. They're pretty just, like, a little bit more than what I had last year.
Okay.
Like catches and yards for real.
Okay.
So I got to find my touchdown minimum and stuff. So, still, you know, going around right now.
You gonna let us know what those are in training camp or before the season starts?
I'll give you a list of maybe two before training camp or something. So, you know what I'm saying? I don't mind.
Yeah.
I don't want to give y'all all of them.
No, yeah.
There's a little bit of Jay and Ja'Marr. And, you know, the one thing that was sort of said to me was, you know, nobody, and this didn't feel like anybody feeding, because this was not something that somebody had to say to me. They said, there's just no way that anybody thinks that you're going to see any let up in Ja'Marr Chase. He's just not that kind of guy. He's like Burrow in that way. You know, I think there's a reason that those guys were kind of connected and found such football chemistry with each other. They view everything the same way. They view practice. They view everything about working on football the same way. And that competitiveness is there. And, you know, it appears to be, there's not really any worry from anyone in the building, like, well, what if he gets a little lax and a little big head? And that just doesn't even seem to be anything that's coming into the conversation there.
Yeah, and that's important because you think about it. He makes that huge leap in his final year at LSU, has that great year, and then you go to the league, and yes, you're the number five pick, but there's still that question of jumping to the next level, and how's he going to do against grown men that are trying to defend him? And he has this huge breakout year, and it would be very, very – it's human nature to think, hey, I'm great, I'm one of the best there is, and to maybe let off the throttle a little bit. And he's not doing that. I think it was Tyler Boyd said that he's been totally locked in, that you see it even in OTAs, how hard he's working whenever it's not a half speed drill, but it's not regular where, like you said, it's just against air. And he's dialed in, and it's not just on the field in practice. It's in meetings. It's working out in the weight room. It's all of that. And yeah, I agree with you that it is very similar to Joe Burrow, where they are self-driven, and no amount of success is going to change that. Because I think they both realize that what this league is, it can catch up to you in a hurry. And just because you're on top one day doesn't mean you're going to stay there without working.
You know, I really like the T. Higgins comparison. What was such a big part of last year at this time, right? The coaching staff and everybody in the building really raving about how T. Higgins looked, how he was approaching his second season, how much comfort he had, how different he looked physically, and people really felt like he was just right. He was like the unanimous, when we do the ascension player, the leap year guy. I mean, it was unanimous. Him and Logan Wilson were just set to take a huge jump. And he did. We pointed out the yards per game, and we know who he was the second half of last season, was a top 10 receiver. I think it's important to keep that in mind when we talk about the second year thing. I mean, there's a real motivation when you get that taste of the success the first year too. I think T's a perfect example of what that looked like for Bengals fans that are thinking about that at all. T just set the perfect path for it. That's why I like to talk to T and what he had to say about it too, which is just sort of, you know, he almost took you through his thought process a little bit from last year, right?
Yeah. I mean, he kind of went back to that same thing where it's all about staying consistent. That you don't have to necessarily work harder, but you just have to do everything you did the year before. Stay consistent with your regimen. And we did. I didn't put that in the story, but we did talk about some of the making his body bigger and better, and how that was kind of in his own mind. It wasn't a direction from the coaching staff or the strength and conditioning staff. It was something he knew he needed to do. That's not the route that Jamar has taken this offseason. I think he's kind of the ideal size for what he is. But it was interesting that T did that even with Jamar's breakout year. You would think a guy comes in as a rookie and has those crazy numbers that the other guys are going to fall off, and they didn't. T got better with Jamar, and that's just kind of the whole philosophy that went into drafting Jamar. He's going to make everyone around him better.
Yeah, and you know that you get through that first year and you learn what you do great, and maybe the few things that teams did to slow you or that you were a little bit not sure about how, you know, you need to improve on, and the ability to take one off season, feel like you can check off the things that you weren't so sure about in your rookie year that were maybe used against you or whatever, and fix those is a part of, I think, why you see all of these great players kind of universally taking a bigger jump. That and just usage in general, that teams want to utilize these guys that kind of become instant stars as rookies. Keep all of that in mind as we start talking about Jamar Chase and coming off his Offensive Rookie of the Year campaign. All right, let's just take a quick break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So let's talk about breakout surprises for the Bengals this year. You know, this was a question asked in my mailbag. I kind of went a little bit into it there, who my choices were, but I thought it'd be a chance to kind of dive a little bit more into those and Jay, let you weigh in as well. I had one of them was Akeem Davis-Gaither. I had Hayden Hurst and Jonah Williams. I want to start here. Before I talk about why I picked Akeem Davis-Gaither, who went out midway through last season with a foot injury and is back now. And, you know, it felt like he was really starting to take off right when his injury happened. I mean, he was really great on special teams. He was playing next to Logan Wilson in their nickel package and really seemed to be figuring things out and coming into his own. And then it was cut short. And, he's back now. He's full go. And I want to talk to him kind of about that process, where he's at now and everything else. And it was a fun little conversation. So we'll come back and talk about some more breakouts. But first, here is one of my top ones. And that is now entering his third season out of App State, Akeem Davis-Gaither.
From the time to kind of last year when you go down, I mean, it felt like, did you feel like you were starting to really figure it out? Yeah.
Getting in a good groove and getting more like confident. I mean, I think the game all about confidence. I think I was starting to really feel like I was getting there. And I mean, maybe the injury was necessary for me. So I mean, I don't look down on it.
Yeah,
just got to grow from it now.
What do you mean? Maybe it was necessary? Like it helps slow you down or think about stuff differently, or how so?
I don't know. I guess this added another chip on my shoulder.
Yeah.
But now I feel like I got to prove myself again, and
yeah.
I think that definitely, and I think that's been my career, just having a chip on my shoulder. I think that kind of revisited that by the injury and sitting out so long.
Yeah. How did you get, was that tough? I mean, was that tough to get through at the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, really the whole time.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, seeing them in the playoffs. I mean, you being happy for God, but I mean, you definitely want to be out there yourself. And that was my first time ever missing a game ever in my life. So, I mean, that was definitely different, just sitting there on the sideline watching it.
Yeah.
So.
What happened on the play? You remember? Remember the play? I'm sure remember the play, like,
yeah,
clear as day. But
it really wasn't really nothing. I just kind of like stepped up and up, and I just felt it pop.
Yeah.
So I guess it might have not had hit all the way.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't nothing drastic. Where I had playing a hole and it just snapped. There's like a light turn, and I just felt it pop.
Did you know it right away?
Yeah.
A lot of guys would say that. Like, yeah. They knew right away.
I came over to Marcus and told him, I was like, I think I just rebroke my foot.
Yeah.
And I kept trying to play. I'm like,
Yeah.
So I started just trying to tape it up.
Tape it up.
That didn't work.
Yeah.
Then I did a kickoff return play, and I tried to run.
Yeah.
I hopped down on one leg the whole way down. I still bought the guy, but.
Yeah.
But I had to hop down on one bit.
You got the guy, though.
Yeah, I did.
Should be pointed out. Should be pointed out you did get the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, do you feel like this is a huge year for you, where you just felt like you're about to take off? Kind of stopped your start a little bit there, but now you got kind of ready to really take off?
Or? It's crazy because, I mean, it seemed like it always happened like this for me, high school, college, where first 2 years is trying to get the groove of it, and something drastic happened, like an injury or something.
Mm-hmm.
And at that, it just take off. So
what happened in high school? High school,
I was just trying to. Just getting in the groove of playing varsity. I played varsity my freshman year. So just getting in the groove of playing for middle school.
I mean, you didn't
school.
Just show up as a freshman on varsity and just run it.
Nah, my dad was like a legend in my high school. So
I
was shadowing his footsteps at first.
Yeah.
So I had that.
People were doubting whether you could live up to the
football. Yeah, they'd call him after every game.
Yeah.
Telling what I was doing. And that happened for like 2 years. Then after my sophomore year, I said, man, I'm tired of hearing that. So
yeah.
After my junior year, that's when I really took off.
Yeah. They stopped calling. They stopped calling your dad. They're telling your dad something different at that point.
Good news.
Yeah.
No.
And then college was the same way kind of for you then, huh?
In college, yeah. First year, redshirted. Then after that, I had the knee scope.
Mm.
Then my rest of sophomore year, I was kind of, I took off in special team. I was special team player of the year.
Yeah.
And after that, junior year, senior year, I just took off.
So you were, I mean, you battled through injury stuff the first couple of years in college. So there's a kind of a similar type of feel to that, or is this?
I want to say it was last year.
But you know, special, like you said, special teams playing here. Then, I mean, I know Darren loved what you were doing on special teams here. Did you feel like that was kind of, you had definitely carved out a role there for sure?
Oh, special teams, for sure. I think I'm one of the leaders on the special teams. I mean, we got a lot of guys to lead, but
yeah.
I think I'm one of them.
Wait, so what's your goals? Like, do you have goals for this year?
Anybody got to have a goal.
Yeah, any that you're voicing? I just take
every day that's getting better, being better than I was the previous day, and especially being better than I was last year. And showing my worth to this team and to the all the organization in the league.
Great to catch up with Akeem, who has the big chip on his shoulder. And I thought it was interesting him talking about how, you know, this is like it's like the same thing that's happened to him before. The first couple of years of high school, he kind of sputtered and dealt with some stuff and then took off. And the first couple of years at App State, he kind of sputtered and dealt with some stuff and then took off. And I think he feels like he's going through that exact same process again and about to take off. And, you know, the honesty of, yeah, man, it was so great to be a part of a team that went to the Super Bowl, but that stinks. You want to play. Like, you want to play in the Super Bowl, and you couldn't, and you felt you could have been out there playing and helping your team. And but anyway, good to catch up with Akeem, who we haven't really talked to since really early on in the last season.
You know, he's kind of similar to Jamar in the fact that he could be a much better player without the stats showing it, because they're not going to play three linebackers very often. And you've got Pratt and you've got Logan Wilson. You've got guys ahead of him. How often is he going to be able to get on the field barring injury? But he's terrific on special teams. He's good. And if they do go nickel where he can get it, instead of getting the extra defensive back on, he can match up on a running back out of the backfield. There's a lot that he can do. I just wonder, as far as breakout player goes, will the opportunity be there for him to truly kind of take that next step? I've got Chris Evans up there. I agree with you on Hayden Hurst. I think there's a real opportunity there for him to be a guy that puts up numbers that he hasn't seen before. He's not going to put up Kelce type numbers in this offense with those receivers, but I'm really interested in Chris Evans. If he wins the kickoff return job, if they elect to not use Joe Mixon as much on third down, and you talked about the fourth wide receiver piece in your mailbag, and you know, could he be that, like Geo? They would line up in the slot, and yes, you've got Tyler Boyd, but if they want to go four wide, you can put Tyler Boyd outside. You can put a guy like Chris Evans in the slot. I think he's a guy, again, not gonna put up crazy numbers, but can definitely break out compared to the numbers he put up last year.
I mean, when they went four and five wides on third and longs and things like that, he always went out there as a receiver and working underneath as a slot guy who could catch and run. I mean, they would run that play where everyone would sprint ahead and block, and then they would throw underneath over the middle to Evans and let him try to weave his way into possibly picking up a third and long. And it worked on a couple occasions, and he really obviously has a knack for that. And then let's not – the difference, you know, we mentioned Geo. I don't see them in the same bucket, because they never used Geo quite like they used Evans at times last year. And that was down the field. Like, put him on the outside, run on the go for a touchdown in Detroit or in the preseason, and really just whipping anytime you try to put linebackers out there. And I think showed a lot of skill in that regard. And also, I would have Evans on this list because, and I gave him a lot of consideration, it was an honorable mention for me, is that, look, running backs just get hurt, man. Like they get hurt. And the idea that Mixon or Perine, because, you know, I think we're learning that they're not buying Joe Mixon as a third down guy. I mean, they took him off the field at the end of last year, in almost every 2 minute and passing down situation in favor of Perine. So if either of those two guys gets hurt, you're going to see a lot more of Chris Evans. And the idea that both of those running backs are going to stay healthy all year, I don't, you know, that's probably the most unlikely out of anything when we start talking about where can injuries come from just because of the nature of the position. So for that fact, you've now got three different ways that Chris Evans could really enter the equation, entering his second year with a point to prove and a little bit of that taste of success and proof of success where they'll be wanting to give him more opportunities. I love that. I agree. I think Chris Evans is going to be a name to watch that we might be talking a lot about as we get to the middle to end point of next season.
You know who also loves this conversation on Chris Evans is the president of the Chris Evans fan club, Mo Egger.
Yeah. Are you trying to segue in, Jay? Are you trying to segue in? Because it is
doing
that
my
time.
Best.
It is that time. Before we get to Mo, you want to talk about Hayden Hurst? I mean, I wrote about him. We both have him. I think he is really being underrepresented when we talk about the guys that can really have a big effect on this team next year. Everybody's going to talk about the receivers and people think of him as sort of like, oh, they didn't get CJ, so they downgraded. I don't necessarily view it that way. I know he doesn't view it that way, and I don't think the Bengals staff views it that way. I really think Hayden Hurst could end up putting up some really sneaky big numbers in this offense.
Yeah, well, you mentioned it in your mailbag where the floor for him would seem to be CJ's numbers, and he can go beyond that. And, you know, he spoke to reporters yesterday and kind of echoed some of the things he said in his introductory press conference where he doesn't think he's ever been used properly. And it's clear he said a couple times, you know, I'm not trying to throw shade on anybody, but it's clear there's a chip on his shoulder that he has not been allowed to showcase what he can truly do yet. And he already through OTAs feels like the Bengals are embracing his skill set and willing to utilize it and what he's seen installed in the offense so far. So he's a first round pick. He was a first round pick for a reason. He's got more speed than CJ. He may not be the blocker CJ was, but he's going to be more of a downfield threat. Whereas CJ was the underneath guy, and you could always count on him to break a tackle or two. Every now and then he would get open behind the defense up the seam. You remember the Baltimore game, the third down play against Jacksonville. There he had his moments, but I think Hayden Hurst is going to be a lot more consistent in providing bigger chunk plays than CJ was.
Yeah, I think if you were looking at it as like a percentage piece of what they would offer, I mean, I think if maybe you're getting the same overall impact, but I think you're getting maybe 60% of your impact in the passing game compared to, you know, 52% in the passing game with CJ. You're a little bit more in the passing game, a little bit less as a blocker, but isn't that kind of where this offense is going, needs to go, is to have somebody who's a little bit more of a passing game threat as opposed to a blocking threat when you just look at the way that they're constructed, the way that they made their big plays, the what they're going to have on the outside, and how they kind of got their hot run going towards the Super Bowl was in opening it up and passing the ball and throwing it. Again, on the field, I think that's where you see Hayden Hurst potentially putting up big numbers. And if that's what we're talking about, is big numbers in the passing game, I think that's where you could see him make an impact. All right, let's flip it forward. Let's have a little fun. Let's bring in our good friend Mo Egger and chat a little bit about everyone's favorite debate and one that he just can't get enough of. So I'm not going to hold him back, Jay. I'm not going to put the restraints on him. I say go all out. And we'll come back and we'll get into more Bengals mailbag questions that you have sent in when we come back. But now let's talk to Mo. You know what? I'm going to just ask Jay to get the numbers out of the way here real quick. How many tweets did Mo have this past week?
He had 107.
107. Oh. A very average week for you. But I would say those 107, there was a high percentage of impactful tweets in there specifically regarding everyone's favorite topic right now, and that it was fantasy football, Tommy Pham, and Jock Peterson. And I want to appreciate for you I'll offer my appreciation of you leading the charge on this.
I love this so much. I badly wish the Reds were in contention, right? It'd be great. It'd be great if, like, you know, it's post Memorial Day and the Reds had like a 4 or 5 game lead in the National League Central. We're like, you know, diving into the throes of a pennant race. But I got to tell you what, if you said you could trade you either get a pennant race or you get Tommy Pham versus Jock Peterson. I'm probably picking a pennant race, but I'd have to think about it.
It's just close. I mean, and it's a gift that keeps on giving. If you haven't read C. Trent's story today, make sure you hop in to learn more about the fact that we learned that Mike Trout is the commissioner of the league, and his Tommy Pham would like to tell you he's doing a terrible job.
Yeah, and so now we need to hear from Mike Trout, and you know, who's the greatest player of this you know, generation. Surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. There's nobody who would dispute that. Unfortunately, he never really has had the postseason stage to display his talents to a large mass audience. But what I want Mike Trout to do is say, I'm as good at being a fantasy football commissioner as Tommy Pham is at playing baseball. And then it's on. And then like now I need Mike Trout to come back at Tommy Pham and hit Tommy Pham where it hurts, which is Trout might be a terrible fantasy football commissioner, but that's cool. You know what? I'm going to the Hall of Fame. I'm generationally wealthy. I'm one of the greatest players of all time. I've been mentioned in the same sentence as Mickey Mantle. Tommy Pham, you're not. I need Mike Trout now to weigh in on this. We've heard from Jock Peterson in precise, excruciating detail. We've heard from Tommy Pham now twice. Now there's another particular here. There's Mike Trout. Plus, Mike Moustakas is in the Fantasy Football League. We're not going to get his thoughts. He's not going to weigh. He has an obligation to weigh in. He's here to be a veteran leader. He's here to be one of the spokespeople of the team. He strikes me as a cooler head than Tommy Pham. How are we not going to hear from Moose? Like there's more layers to this onion to peel back. And I put the onus on people like C. Trent to get it done for me because I need this.
I appreciate C. Trent because my number one question was all these guys making millions of dollars. What was the entry fee? And that was the big question out there until I read his piece this morning or Wednesday morning. And, you know, 10,000 sounds like a lot, but I did the math. I don't know if you guys have done the math. But for a person making $50,000 a year, that's like an $85 fantasy league. That's not necessary. That's not as high rolling as maybe I thought it would be.
Okay, but now are they charging for waiver claims? How many free transactions do you get? Are there weekly prizes? Do you have to pay up if you break a rule? What's the draft look like? Who pays for the end of season party? Like plus. Because they can't do an in-season in-person draft. They're all playing baseball. Although, to me, the only reason to be in a fantasy football league is for the draft, right? I don't want to draft virtually. We ran out the top of O'Brien's. It's the best. The 2 years we couldn't do it because of COVID, that sucked. I don't want to do that. So they can't do that during the season. So there has to be some sort of end-of-season gathering, perhaps during the NFL playoffs, maybe in Vegas. What does that look like? Who foots the bill? Like, there's more economic, I think, questions than simply, what's the entry fee? And they're making the guy who comes in last pay double. Yeah. Wow, that's pretty cool. I mean, I like that. Are more fantasy football leagues going to steal that? Mine probably will. I like it. Puts the pressure on you to not sort of, you know, play out the string once you're 2-8 and you stop caring about your fantasy football team. Now you've got to care. I like this. We're going to steal that from this league. We're going to steal that. We're not going to steal the slap. Although that could be a fun dynamic, right? Whoever comes in last gets slapped by the guy who comes in first, right?
Oh,
now you're really paying attention late in the season. I might propose this in our league at our draft, which will be in person. And by the way, Tommy Pham's invited. He'll go in on a team with me, perhaps. I need a guy who's a stickler for the rules. I need a guy who's going to provide some muscle. I need a guy who takes this seriously, more seriously than I do. There's lots to this.
Well, and at that post year party in Vegas, it'd be very helpful to know someone who's a big dog there. That's what you need. You want to, if you only you knew someone who was a big dog in Vegas, then you could have a really great postseason party.
Well, now that the NFL has expanded the postseason and there's a 6-game wild card weekend, that is a sneaky good Vegas weekend. If you don't want to do the NCAA tournament, if maybe you can't do it an entire Saturday or Sunday of college or pro football, like 3 games Saturday, 2 games Sunday, 1 game Monday, whatever it was this past year, that's a really good 3-day trip that you break off to Vegas and celebrate your fantasy football league. You need Tommy Pham there for that.
Yeah.
You need a big dog in Vegas. You need a high roller in Vegas. Again, just to provide some muscle, just to provide some beef. Now, what I want to know is this. You go to the craps table with Tommy Pham. Chances are he's playing with more money than you are. Is he one of those guys? Because he strikes me as one that, you know, you go to Vegas, let's say you play at noon and we're going to gamble for a couple of hours. He loses. Is he now salty the rest of the day? Is like the rest of the day done? Are we not doing dinner? Are we not going out? Is this guy in such a pissy mood now because he lost money? Like there's nothing worse than going to Vegas with that guy. And I have, and it's awful.
Well, I will say this. I don't want to pretend that we're going to talk about anything Bengals. I'm not. We're not. We're just not. We're not. This is too good. And I want to give you a chance to really flap your wings on this one because you've been kind of restricted, I think, to this point. Here's my one question that I have for you in regards to this, and we'll kind of do it a run, pass, or boot style. I'm going to do a run, pass, or boot with you on your favorite detail of this entire story ranked. Okay, so run, pass, or boot. Trout is the commissioner and doing a terrible job. Everything about big dog in Vegas, high roller in many casinos, which only prompts me to wonder which are the ones that he's not a high roller in. If it's just many, it's not all. Can we specify which casinos you would not be considered a high roller in? Is it a Bellagio thing? Anyway, or third, Jock Peterson's entire interview where he goes through the group chat with the weird hat and the mundane voice. Which of those three, run, pass, or boot?
Well, the entire Jock Peterson two-day media availability is just should go in the Hall of Fame of post-game media scrums. And I said to you yesterday, Paul, this is why you guys do what you do and I do what I do, because I don't know how anybody covering this story hasn't broken out in laughter as these men. I mean, first of all, Jock Peterson, I've always thought that like the most thoughtful athlete I've ever heard in detailing something they did in the context of a game or their approach or what they did during the offseason was Joey Votto, right? I've thought for years I could listen to Joey Votto talk about hitting for an entire car ride to like Florida, right? Just give me that. Somebody should podcast Joey Votto just talking about hitting, because he could describe in exceptional detail like every single pitch that every pitcher throws and his thoughts and what he's doing with the bat. I mean, hell, the piece in the preseason about his hockey puck bat, which didn't really turn out to be a thing, but I'm reading, you know, thousands of words about this hockey puck bat because Joey Votto is willing to just outline for you why the hockey puck bat is so much better than whatever the hell he was using before. Well, Jock Peterson took that to a different level. First of all, on Friday, after this insane game that ends at like midnight, there he is explaining in precise detail what happened, why everybody got mad, the transaction that was in question. And I'm looking at this going, this is terrific. And then the following night, he was dressed up like, I dropped my kid off at daycare. There was a little boy dressed like Jock Peterson today. And I don't think an homage to Jock Peterson. I think that's how 5-year-old boys dress. That's what Jock looked like. I appreciated that. And then there he is, somewhat sheepishly holding up the phone with the GIF or the GIF. And we're still not, you know, certain on what the correct pronunciation of that is. And I so appreciated, and you guys know, athletes blow you off. You have a question, they answer it. They want it. No, Jock was there. He was there to explain his side of the story, and he did it willingly in exceptional detail. That, to me, so far at least, is the absolute best thing about this whole story.
So there's one.
Do we need to explain run, pass, or boot rules here?
You need another two. Are you going to rank now? What's second then? Amongst Trout being the commissioner and doing a terrible job, and Big Dog in Vegas, high roller in many casinos.
I think Big Dog in Vegas.
Yeah.
I mean, the Tommy Pham experience as a Reds fan has been interesting, right? Because, first of all, there's, hey, I'm here to get my numbers up, which, by the way, I was cool with. Like, great, get your numbers up. It's going to help the team. Do what you got to do, man. I have no problem with that. I wish more players would say that. Here, I'm here to get my numbers up. What he didn't say and what he probably wanted to say is this team sucks. We're not going to be very good. So whatever. I'm not going to play in October. I'm going to get my numbers up and maybe find some new friends for his new fantasy football league that he has to be in. I don't know. So you start with that. And then Luke Voit, the situation with him and Tyler Stevenson where he concusses him. I don't really think it was dirty, but I can appreciate any player sticking up for any one of their teammates at any time. My man takes it to a different level where he's talking about Muay Thai and they're going to go to a gym and what, huh? What do we got here? And then this situation here, I mean, this is incredible. My man comes to the ballpark, right? They're playing the Giants. He had to know Jock Peterson's on the team. Tommy Pham showed up at GABP on Friday night, not thinking about playing against the San Francisco Giants and helping his team win, but getting retribution for a fantasy football beef slash GIF argument. This is incredible. And then when asked to explain, you know, you said this to me yesterday, Paul, he and Jock sort of agree on most of the details of the story. Now he has said since that there's a few more things that Jock texted that he didn't take issue with, but they agree on the basic sort of outline of the story here. And then he drops on us, I'm a big dog in Vegas. I'm a high roller. If you would have said to me, pick the Reds player who was going to say that before the season started, I think I would have said Tommy Pham. It's become very on brand. And the beauty of this is we're not even a third of the way through the season. Who knows what other storylines? Let's face it, the Reds are not really in it. They're going to be playing out the string. So when we get to August and September, assuming Tommy is still here, and I hope to God now he is, what else is there that this man is going to provide? Because it's been nothing but fantastic. So I'll go with that. And then I'll rank the Mike Trout thing third, only because we haven't heard from him yet, right? Like, I think it's incredible that the best player in the sport is the commissioner of a league, and they said he didn't want to be the commissioner of the league. Mike Trout seemingly has the clout to go, boys, I'm not doing this. I'll be in your league. I'll play for your 10K, but I'm the best player in the sport. I have the burden of carrying this entire freaking sport to through the rest of the decade. I don't have time to be worrying about waiver wires and trades and fantasy disputes and handing out cash. Who's the treasurer of the league? Is all the money done crypto? Is it virtual? I mean, there's so many different questions here. I think Mike Trout now has a responsibility to answer them as the league's commissioner. Don't be like Roger Goodell. Don't be like Rob Manfred. Make yourself available as a commissioner and talk about your role in this league unraveling and this fiasco that has, to me, turned into the best story of the 2022 baseball season.
I would run with Trout as commissioner because as someone who is a commissioner, I know how hard it is. And I know it is a hard job, but you make it easier by, I have my own website for these leagues and the rules are up there before the season. You take care of that. The big dog in Vegas thing. I think Tommy Pham is more of a chihuahua than a Great Dane in Vegas because maybe to the layman, yes, he's a big roller. There's way more high rollers than Tommy Pham in Vegas. I think he's inflating his status there a little bit.
What do you know about Tommy Pham's status in Vegas? Maybe he does roll in and get respect.
But he's also originally from Vegas, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I mean, in his Instagram thing, it's like T-Fam LV. He's got the initials of the city in his handle. That's a pretty big dog.
It's a big dog. It's a real big dog.
It's also not big dog. It's big whale. Because if you're spending, nobody goes to Vegas and wins full time. So if you're going and spending that kind of money, yeah, they are very appreciative of his patronage because I'm sure he's donating quite a bit of his 401k to those nice
luxury hotels. Right? Because you know who you don't want to be? If Tommy Pham is a blackjack player and you're to his right and you make the wrong decision and it screws up his hand, look out.
I'm finding,
Pit boss is coming over.
Jay and Tommy might have some stuff to talk about because I have played blackjack next to Jay before and he likes to analyze other people's moves and that how they were not proper and how they cost him his money.
Right,
and,
but he's not slapping them.
No,
Jay is not slapping, but there's a look. There's
eye rolls. There's size.
I have tried to mentor. I mean, I've said like, hey, man, you know, next time you probably don't want to do that. And here's why. And that's OK. I think that's helpful. It's helpful to you. It's helpful to them. It's helpful to the rest of the table. It's great. Hmm. Does Tommy Pham skip that step and just slap the person? I mean, I don't know. Strikes me as. And the other thing that's amazing about this is the length of time. This was during the 2020 season, okay? This wasn't a month ago. This was during the 2020 season. My man sat there for a year and a half and waited to get retribution. That is incredible. Also, why? Why has nobody gotten comment from Jeff Wilson? The San Francisco 49ers have a marvelous beat writer for The Athletic. I think it's David Lombardi. He's incredible. Does a great job. Why has no one heard from Jeff Wilson about this? This guy woke up on Saturday morning at the center of the greatest baseball story in decades, and he hasn't tweeted about it. I've checked his Twitter feed every 10 minutes. I'm trying to get him on the air. Why has nobody heard from Jeff Wilson? Why has nobody gotten comment from Jeff Wilson?
I do want Trout at a podium in a full like suit, like real commissioner style, giving a keynote address, maybe create a logo for their league that can go on the front of the podium too, so it can look like the MLB, where the MLB logo would be, and make it real official and like just take this seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look, they're going to make him available at like the All-Star game or something, right? So he's going to have this forum. Also, I would love to have been in the room when somebody approached David Bell and said, hey, the Giants are requesting that Tommy Pham doesn't play tonight. Oh yeah, why? Well, remember when he went out to the warning track and slapped Jock Peterson? Yeah. Like, David Bell's got a hard enough gig right now. Yeah, he's got to worry about his player slapping other dudes over fantasy football texts. I mean, this is just, this is simply amazing.
I know that this spot is very normally reserved for Bengals talk, but that just didn't feel right today. No. It felt like it would have been doing a disservice to this topic that, and you know what? I mean, football is a part of the conversation, so it really all ties in together. But I wanted to make sure I gave you an opportunity to make sure we could kind of just get some things off your chest with it. I just wanted to make sure we address the fact that there's just no Bengals in this, because it's just too good.
There's nothing going on with the Bengals. And I mean, look, what I love about this is we're doing this on Wednesday morning. This story first began to unfold on Friday afternoon. And here we are 5 days later, we're still talking about it. And there's still so many unanswered questions.
Yeah.
This has legs that could really carry this till, I don't know, the start of the football season. I mean,
and let's be honest, for you, you kind of need it. It's a long way until we get to camp.
This was pennies from heaven, man. I mean, this could not have been timed better. This was perfect, and I thank everybody involved for bringing this into my life. This is just the best.
Well, Mo, we thank you for bringing these last 18 minutes into our life. It was highly enjoyable, and we'll catch up with you next week, and maybe we'll have Bengals questions for you then.
Yeah, well, yeah, because you have questions for me about the Bengals. That's right.
Yeah. we'll talk to you later. All right, thanks to Mo. Our big dog in Cincinnati, really. I mean, at this point, I would say
Unleashed.
Yes. Fun count. Just great. I enjoy everything about all this. And shout out to C. Trent and everybody that's following this story for us. And please go read his story right now up in The Athletic, because it gets into the details of the league and the incident and the things yelled in the clubhouse and everything else that has come of this. It's just fantastic stuff, as always. Let's dive into some mailbag. I want to discuss a little bit more something I wrote about in the mailbag on Friday, and that was because so many people continue to ask about this, and we've addressed it a bunch here, but I just want to kind of talk more about this idea of wide receiver four. And sort of when I wrote it last week, I was like, look, let's go through the last 5 years. Let's look at who are the fourth most used receivers. What does that look like? Who are they? What percentage are we talking about of the actual snaps from these guys? And you go back the last 2 years, for those that say, how could you have Mike Thomas as the fourth receiver? He's been the fourth receiver the last 2 years. And he was at 13% last year and 21% of the total snaps in 2020. I mean, he's played this role. Their argument would be, we know who he is. He's really effective on special teams, which is a really important part of being wide receiver four. He is a player that they know what they're going to get. They know he knows the offense. He can run the routes. He can do all those things. And, you know, finding somebody else who can come in and check all those boxes. Maybe you can, maybe you can't, but certainly in a free agency matter, people don't want to come here and sit and watch the big three play. They want to go somewhere where they can play somewhere. And so it's hard to do that. So if you're talking about where it can come from, waiver wires, maybe trades, when you get to later into the season, I would think if something happens in the preseason or in camp and you have an injury at the receiver position early, maybe you see a move get made to try to find another body there. But for now, I don't get the sense that there's some urgency or anything resembling panic about wide receiver four, for as much as we hear. And that's maybe a boring thought. It's not as exciting as going out and trying to overpay Will Fuller or whatever the hell you want to do. But I think that's where they stand on it.
You know, I similar to how you piggybacked off of my stats and in the receiver and sophomore slump thing, I tried to do it with your wide receiver four piece, looking at what those numbers have looked like for the Bengals. I looked at the top 10 passing offenses last year and what their wide receiver four looked like. And it didn't quite work out. So here's the problem. I threw my hands up once I got to about five or six.
Hashtag Jay's got failed stats.
Yeah, well, Tampa Bay's number four was Antonio Bryant or Antonio Brown. Now, you know, that's just an outlier situation, you would think, but no. Rams, number four wide receiver, Odell Beckham Jr. I got to the Raiders, number four wide receiver, Henry Ruggs. There were just all these weird situations that made guys that aren't really the number four receiver the number four receiver. But the other ones, it was similar. It's, you know, 25 to 35 catches, and you're just not going to get a lot of impact from that guy, whoever it is. There's only so many passes to go around. Now, yes, if there's an injury, you would like to have someone that could step in and not be much of a drop off, but realistically, it's if you have to be light at a position, that's probably the best one to be light at when you are so top heavy as the Bengals are, with arguably the best trio of starting receivers in the league.
And look, I mean, let's look at some of the great quarterbacks of our generation. Name me their great receivers and their how they make great receivers happen, right? Mm-hmm. Like Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, whatever. I mean, people that made great receivers happen. You don't have to be carried by great receivers. When you have Joe Burrow, when you have a flexible scheme, you can run more 12. You can run more stuff that focuses on Jamar if T's out. You can run stuff that focuses more on what T and Tyler can do if you have Jamar out. And you can scheme things around. Burrow can make things happen. There's so many. You lose two. Yeah, you might be seeing a significant drop off, but who can't say that? Like every team right now, if you say you lost two of your top three receivers, is going to say, damn, that's a big, that's a game changer. That's just part of it, right? Yeah. And so the fact that they don't have elite depth, you know, they do have elite quarterback. And that tends to make up for that as well. And if we're sitting here talking about wide receiver four, bemoaning wide receiver four in June, you're in a good place roster-wise. And again, you can see additions that might happen as guys get let go from other teams or whatever as that goes on. We'll see. But for now, I would say some of the discussion over it and maybe the intensity of thinking that something has to happen is not something that exists inside of the building as much. Let's go. Jason Fair has a question. This is kind of, again, it's the day of piggybacking. It's kind of piggybacking. So if the injury bug hits, which position groups are in the most danger? Jay?
Well, we just said it doesn't matter.
You're going to go receiver. Are you going to go receiver?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that that's going to be a drop off. Well, quarterback, obviously. Tight end. I mean, if something happens to Hayden Hurst, are you comfortable with Mitch Wilcox and Drew Sample? They are not going to put up CJ type of numbers, you wouldn't think. And I think we talked about it. I think they're good at linebacker with the emergence of Marcus Bailey and then Akeem Davis Gaither. If something happens to one of the two regular starters, I guess maybe defensive tackle would be the other area. It was something that we thought would be more addressed in the draft. They did get Zach Carter. Maybe he can slide inside. They've got Cam Sample. You've got guys that you can move in there, but to have a true three technique, if something happens to BJ Hill, that might be the biggest concern.
I'd still say it's interior offensive line. I mean, for me, yeah. I still look at, you know, we're talking about if you lose Ted Karras, if you lose Alex Kappa, you're right back where you started. If not, worse. I mean, at center, we're talking about Trey Hill or Ben Brown or I guess Karras specifically. To me, if I was guessing where my WAR would end up, which the wins above replacement I like to do before every year, who you can least afford to lose if an injury happens, the most significant fall off, obviously beyond quarterback, Karras might end up being up there. Just because I don't know what the answer is at center that anybody's going to feel good about. At least at guard, I mean, you don't feel great, but, you know, you did draft Volson. You have Carmona you took. You could push Deontay Smith inside. You've got Adeniji who played. I mean, those things might not excite you. At least there, you have something. Tackle is not as bad. You know, Deontay Smith, I think you feel like can play tackle in this league. Prince played okay enough for you last year. You've got the two starters. I don't think you feel as bad there. But to me, center, and then to a lesser extent, the guard spots, to me still stands out as where you're still nervous about injuries putting you right back where you were last year.
Yeah, I mean, a big question is going to be Ben Brown. He was a guy that probably would have been a mid-round pick had it not been for the injury. The Bengals pluck him in free agency after the draft. We saw him running with the twos because of Kappa being out. It'll be interesting to see how he develops and how much of a benefit, because he's a guy that can play center or guard, and what he can give them as far as depth at that spot where you're right. I just felt like, well, the O-line's been fixed, and it just didn't even enter my mind. But yes, it may have been fixed, but it's still a little thin in the interior.
Another question from Bengals Shadow 20. What changes to the offense do you envision with the offensive line additions? You know what we're doing there with that question, Jay? We're piggybacking. What changes to the offense can you envision now that you have these guys? For me, is not necessarily I guess it would be additions, but more usage. You know, there's lots of, you know, deep drops in their playbook, and they ran some deep drops. They ran a lot less as last year went on, but, you know, they weren't afraid to still call them some. It's kind of how you end up with 70 sacks, but they ran them, and I just think you'll see more successful usage and overall usage of deep drops, of the play action deep drops, and not afraid to do some stuff that has longer developing plays. And that doesn't mean that there was none last year or that they're going to do away with quick game. I mean, you're still going to see a combination of all that stuff. I just think you'll see, you know, a 5 to 10% shift from quick game to some of the longer developing stuff that you see in those old parts of the Rams system and just stuff that they have in their playbook. So to me, that's the difference. And you can talk about some run game stuff probably too, Jay, and you might be able to do that. But to me, I think the most significant change I expect to see is just that percentage shift of willingness to use some of the longer developing stuff.
Yeah, you read my mind, because that was so much of the focus on improving the offensive line was on protecting Joe Burrow. But I think you're going to see them more comfortable to run the ball in the red zone, something you alluded to in your mailbag. I think they're going to be more willing to the third and ones, the short yardage, where we saw them pass so much. They were so bad in those short yardage situations and converting them with run plays. And I think that's a big part of it too, where you've got not just Burrow protectors, but you've got people movers in there where you can create those holes in tight spots for Joe Mixon or whoever's in the backfield. It gets overlooked sometimes because Mixon had a really good year, but there were plenty of times that they struggled to run the ball. Third and one in the Super Bowl comes immediately to mind. So I think that is another area where you can see it sounds odd to say run the ball is going to open up the offense, but I think it will. I think it's going to give them more options, having a better quality offensive line. It's not all about just keeping Joe Burrow upright.
Totally agree. Let's get to some important questions here, Jay.
Okay.
This from at Aaron Hake.
Hey, Aaron. I know Aaron.
You know Aaron?
I do know Aaron. Yes, I don't think he lives in Hamilton anymore, but he was my mailman at a time.
then this makes so much sense. You want specifically to know from you. This is what he would have talked to you about as you were mowing your grass with your shirt off and he's delivering the mail to you. He'd have said, have you tried the burger at Arby's, Jay?
I have. Okay, this was... I was suspect. I was like, why is Arby's doing burgers? They stick to what you do well. Why? There's no ham, but you're going to have hamburgers? It didn't make any sense. So, okay, this is a long story, but I have a friend that has ALS, and we go down and do yard work at his house and try to help out his wife. And I went down Sunday morning. I was the only one able to make it. So I did yard work at his house for 5 hours, hadn't eaten. I was driving home, parched. So I stop at an Arby's to get an orange cream shake. I love those. It's my guilty pleasure. And I was reminded, I'd forgot about it. We were going to go to a pool party and I knew there was going to be food at the pool party, but I saw the ad on the drive-through menu board for the burger. And I was like, all right, I'll try one. It was freaking awesome. I don't get a lot of fast food burgers. I'm more of a chicken and turkey type of person, and maybe it was because I was just so damn hungry, but it was really good. It's a steak burger. It is thick. It's cooked medium instead of well done, like most fast food burgers. It had a great soft brioche bun, had all the fixings. I don't know what the sauce, it looks like Thousand Island, but it doesn't quite taste like Thousand Island. It was just, I've been thinking about going back and getting another one since getting that one on Sunday.
What a stunning turn of events. That you love the decisions that those that run Arby's and send you meat sweats and gift cards have decided to make. It's really surprising to see this.
I'm not angling for anything. This is a true, honest opinion. I have receipts. I texted in my friend group, the other ones that go down and do the yard work from time to time, about my Arby's experience, and my friend 10 minutes later sent me a picture of his Arby's bag. He went to see if it was as good as I said, and he agreed with me.
Well, then it's settled.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, 2-0, undefeated.
I feel like I'm being guilted into having to try this thing. And I don't know if I can do it, but maybe I will. All right. Last question. This one came from friend of the program, Will Lutz, who said, what is the best food road trip on the Bengals 2022 schedule? I have a top three and I'm really torn on my third, but I think I've got my top two. I don't know if you, maybe you agree. I don't know. Number one, I think is obvious. Number one is New Orleans. New Orleans has incredible food. Like, I mean, I can't even start to explain how excited I get to go down there and whether we're talking about gumbos or Cajun shrimp or beignets or any of the incredible and the restaurants down there are off the chart. It's everything you love. Give me New Orleans all day, every day. No contention there. Two, Baltimore.
Yeah.
I mean the crab, when you get in crab cake season.
Yes.
Like it's hard to beat. Like the meals are so good. That dinner is so good every year. You love going to Baltimore. I mean, you know what you're getting. It's not about variety. Like I think New Orleans has variety and sort of some specific specialties that you appreciate that puts them above, but like what you are getting is so good. Their one trick, if they're a one trick pony, their one trick is fantastic, and I'll take it as my number two. Would you agree or disagree? Do you have something else above it?
No, I've never been to Tampa. I've heard great things about the steakhouse down there and the food down there. I haven't been to New Orleans since I was in junior high and was a super picky eater. So I would think that would be at the top of the list. My Baltimore story is I've never been a huge seafood fan. And so, the first time I went there, PJ Combs from the Bengals media relations department insists we go to Moe's every time. And so I tried the crab cakes. I never had them before and they were amazing. You're right. I've not done the cracking crabs, but every year since I've looked forward to those crab cakes. Not only were they good, they were huge. And I tell people all the time, I could only eat one. And then we went out for drinks. And then there I am at 12:31 in the morning, pulling the other crab cake out of my refrigerator in my hotel room with no fork or anything to eat it with, and just picking it apart with my fingers and just enjoying it, man. Just as much. Just it was great.
Love it. And third, I'm sort of torn for a few different reasons. Tampa is great. And again, I'm a seafood lover, so I love going down there. There is a restaurant that I've kind of fallen in love with called the Columbia that Dan Hoard turned me on to, that went to in the preseason last year, that the food was just outstanding. I liked it so much. We went when we were on a vacation down there in February, made sure to go back for date night with my wife, and it was every bit as good as I thought it was. So that stands out. I haven't gone to Burns Steakhouse in forever. It's incredible. It's incredibly expensive, but it's worth it, type of place. That said, I mean, the problem with New York is it would be number one for insane variety and quality, except, again, a lot of times you just stay in Jersey because it's closer to the stadium. Now, and not that it's hard, you can't go in, but just out of a convenience factor, to be really in the heart of the great New York food city, it's a little bit more challenging to do it unless you just stay in there, which you can do. But again, there's just a lot of logistical stuff with that. So while New York is an obvious, I don't have it up there. And then Tennessee, I mean, you start talking about hot chicken and barbecue and so much of the good stuff they have down there. But I've been to some great places there, and it's a hell of a food city. So I don't want to feel like it's not getting its love, because it deserves some as a great food city. But it's just a tick below New Orleans and Baltimore for me. And sort of those three, Tampa, Tennessee, and New York, all have something that has them kind of tied for third. And it's a week out by me in what I feel like is a very important question that I've probably broken down more than I need to. But that's, you know, I just wanted to make sure I that's where I stay. That's where I stand on that.
Well, unlike the Arby's discussion, I do have an ulterior motive for the food thing, because I said I've not been to Tampa. Went on my vacation a couple of weeks ago. We went to Naples for 4 days, and then we went to Daytona for the rock festival at Daytona Speedway for 4 days. And on the way there, we stopped in St. Pete's because my brother works at a very cool historic hotel called the Hollander. And we just stopped by and had lunch with him on his lunch break in the hotel. And I had a Cuban sandwich there. Was fantastic. So if anybody's planning on going down to the Bengals game in Tampa, check out the Hollander Hotel as possibly a place to stay and say hello to my brother Jeff if you do. My sneaky honorable mention pick would be Cleveland, because if you go there in Christmas ale season after 3, 4, or 5 of those, everything tastes great.
Everything tastes great. That's right. Just order off the entire Great Lakes menu down there at their restaurant, and you'll just be so happy. It's true. The Great Lakes factor. So that's my list. Thanks, Will, for the question. And thanks, everybody, for all the questions. There's so many more that we haven't been able to get to. We'll keep trying to. Keep sending them to us, and we'll keep trying to get to, especially in these off-season ones. We want to be answering whatever questions you have. So keep sending them in, either to us on Twitter, or, of course, you can send them to me in my email. lpdaner@theathletic.com. All right, that wraps us up. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week as we see helmets. Jay, helmets. Wow. Yes. Helmets next week. So we're kind of a next step in the process that we'll be able to talk about on the pod then. All right, thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.